Hi there. Thanks very much for checking out Tellage Talks. This week, my guest is Joe Juravicius. He's a product of Northeast Ohio, Lake Catholic High School, his number 84, retired at the school, Penn State University, and then many years as an NFL player. He played in three Super Bowls, won one of those with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But he has had some very, very difficult, heartbreaking, and tragic things happen to him and to his family over the years. At the height of his success with the Super Bowl victory down in Tampa Bay, he lost his little boy, Michael. Should never, ever have to bury one of your own. But that was the situation that Joe found himself in. But now, in the last year of his 40s, Joe is trying to pick up the pieces one more time and get back up on his feet after a business of his burned to the ground, everything gone. In our conversation, a wide-ranging array of topics we discuss, but it was good to just sit down and chat with Joe, a young man that I first started covering and knowing about back when he was a star at Lake Catholic High School. So our history goes quite a few years back. Certainly one of the more remarkable athletes in Northeast Ohio over the many years that I have covered sports, now going on 44 years. And just a great young man now, a father and a middle-aged man, if you will. Getting back up, it is so, so difficult, and that is the situation that Joe is in as we speak. Our conversation right here on Tellage Talks, it's Joe Juravicius.
It is great to have former Cleveland Brown, former Penn State star, NFL stalwart Joe Juravicius on the line with us here on the podcast. Thank you so much for being on the show, Joe. And of course, we go way, way, way back. I can recall giving you a player of the week award for Fox 8 back when you were playing at Lake Catholic. And what hit me right from the start was you called me Mr. Tellage, and I was impressed by that.
I appreciate that. I have since we started off on this note, I'll make you laugh here. So my manager, one of my best friends who works with me over with my business, played football at Lake Catholic with me. His name's Ed Locker.
And Ed
knew a little tidbit today. I didn't know that Ed told me today that you were the first person to ever interview him.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
I thought that was pretty funny. So the first interview that he ever did as a high school athlete was with you.
Wow. That is, and it's just, that's been one of the real blessings of the long career that I've had at Channel 8 in Cleveland, was to meet a ninth grader, Robert Smith, or to interview Kareem Hunt or Mitch Trubisky or Mo Claret and Joe, you right up at the, what was your, you had a left-handed quarterback and his name's escaping me.
Rick Trevsker.
Oh yes. And he went to Kansas,
Rick went to Purdue. We were fortunate at that time because we had our left-handed quarterback, Rick Trevsker, who went to Purdue and handed the ball off to Mike Allstott. Made it pretty simple, right? And Mike's one of my best friends from my days in Tampa. But what's interesting is, you know, at that time, we've had some good quarterbacks come out of Lake Catholic. You had Rick Trevsger going to Purdue. Pete Jelovic, who was in my class, was the righty who went to Kansas State.
There we go. That was Jelovic.
Okay. We've had, obviously, Ricky Stanzi, who went to the University of Iowa. But we've had good ones out of there. But my quarterback to start my career was Rick Trevsger. And then the quarterback that came in after Rick at Purdue was actually Drew Brees.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. These are really connecting the dots time for me, Joe. and the arc, the professional arc that you had, remarkable. We'll get to that. But let's just start with what happened very, very recently to you. You had a business called The Clean Group, and you sustained a very serious fire. What exactly happened?
Just so I started when I retired from football, John. I had a I took what I called a 2-year sabbatical. I needed to get away. I was battling depression from my playing days being done. It was just really hard for me to kind of get acclimated to civilian life, if you want to call it that.
Okay.
Wasn't because I thought that football was that I was any better than anybody else, but it's what I did for such a long time, and the commitment, the structure that I had, it was gone. And you'll hear that a lot from pro athletes of any sport, men and women. Like when the discipline's gone, it's difficult. So anyway, I took a 2-year sabbatical, and coincidentally, one of my one of the guys that's kind of in my circle of friends, one of my best friends, is from Nebraska. He's a rancher, and I took a 2-year sabbatical. I worked on his ranch. I was helping guide hunts, do fencing. He owns a 42, 43, 44,000 acre ranch here in Mullen,
Wow.
Nebraska, in Sandhills, kind of like a real day John Dutton. And so anyway, I knew that that was just my kind of escape from everyday life. I got into the laundromat business through a financial advisor friend of mine who introduced me to a guy from Penn State who's about 10 years older than I am. And Bob, a guy by the name of Bob Schwartz, got me into laundromats. From there, I kind of fell into a residential app and pickup for just residential laundry. And then somebody called one day and said, "Do you guys do napkins?" You know, like, sure, we do napkins. What the hell's a napkin? You know, kind of thing. And I got into the tabletop linen and supply. And, you know, the Clean Group is the parent company, but we do businesses cleaning tabletop linen and supply. And so I've built this linen company where we've got some of the, you know, biggest names from Rocco Whalen and Pure W and hotels that are just the Kimpton. And, you know, we've got it. We've done pretty well. And we started this thing about 6 years ago. And what's crazy is 2 of those years were, you know, through the pandemic. So we've survived and we're doing really well. And I travel home about once a month to check in on family and my business. And I work every morning here from my warehouse office in Nebraska dealing with this. But I got up and I started getting a text message from somebody I know that's in the business. And then one of the news channels had asked if I wanted to comment, and I was confused because I couldn't sleep that morning. I came into my warehouse, believe it or not, at 3 o'clock in the morning. I got up, and I typically get up at 5 o'clock in the morning every morning without alarm clock to get my workout in and start my day. And I just couldn't sleep. So I said, I might as well go into the warehouse. And so 3 o'clock here is 4 o'clock back home in Cleveland. And I was confused, and finally I called Eddie, who we talked about earlier, and just asked, what's going on? You know, and he's was, you know, in total shock, and just said it was gone, and the building had caught on fire and obviously burned to the ground. So not the easiest way to wake up. You know, I saw you last week in the coffee shop, getting my cup of coffee. I was home for the week and living in a hotel, and just trying to keep the company up and running. And, you know, it's something that I put so much time and effort into that to have that thing kind of crumble down, it was tough, and it's been tough. Every morning I get up and I do the same thing. I have to stick with my discipline to keep me healthy, mentally sharp, and do all those things. But John, it's been brutal. I mean, when you see something go up in flames, you know, and not go the way that you want it to, it's difficult. But right now we're doing everything we can to survive, and we are doing it through hard work and determination, with a promise from all of our, you know, our list of over 350 businesses in the city of Cleveland that we're, you know, we're not going away. We're going to make this right. So we've got trucks driving to Toledo, to Pittsburgh, Erie, Pennsylvania. We've got people trying to help us get back on our feet, and we will get back on our feet. But right now, it's, you know, it's tough. Like it just occupies my mind. And actually being able to jump on the podcast with you is a little distraction for me. So, you know, it's healthy, but it's a business that I started, and it's something that I passionately believe in because it was a challenge for me, and I knew nothing about business. You know, I played sports for a living, you know, and it was important for me that as I started to kind of go through life that I wasn't going to rest on my laurels. And, you know, at times I think, yeah, sure as heck would have been a lot easier to take that phone call from Jason Garrett and go coach with him in Dallas, or John Gruden asking me to come out to Oakland before they moved to Vegas to coach. And I said no. And now I get to deal with the trials and tribulations of business ownership.
Wow, it's really a feel for you, my friend, to be rebounding from something like that, because, you know, sad to say, in some ways you've had some practice at this, because you've had some hurdles that you've dealt with in your life. And I don't know if I want to undress all of that per se, but it's brought you to this point, and you've had a certain degree of resolve from that, Joe, I'm sure, that will steel you, I'm assuming, as well, to get past this.
Right? Yeah, John, I'll tell you this. I have been dealt some blows, and it's funny because I've gone through these ebbs and flows of life, and especially over the last week, you do a lot of questioning. But, you know, by far the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life is, you know, bury my son. I've been robbed. I've had an infection. I tried to save a guy at Lanza's Winery. My business burns down. And, you know, I try to find positive. And I got to be honest, sometimes it's pretty hard. You know, mm-hmm. I think personally I've been through a lot more than a lot of people have, you know, again. And I know, and I always try to keep it in perspective. You know, we were talking about Ricky Stanzi at the University of Iowa back in the day. Yeah. And every time you turn on an Iowa football game, the fans of Iowa turn around to the children's hospital and wave to it. So those kids have it worse than I do. Yeah. There's no kids to be in a hospital with cancer, whatever ailment they're dealing with. So I do try to keep things in perspective. But, you know, when you get kicked between the groin as many times as I have, you have no choice but to be tough and get up. And, you know, I'm a believer in the up above, right? That one day we're all going to see the big guy and I get to see my family again. And, but I'm not overly religious, right? I kind of feel like, you know, if he wants me to keep walking through hell, then I'm going to keep walking, and I'll get it figured out. I'll get out of there one day, but I have no choice but to walk. And I do this stuff for my kids to prove to them that, you know, life isn't always easy. And one day when I'm not on the earth, my wife's not on the earth, man, you got to get your ass up, because life is going to keep going. And I have no choice. These are the cards I've been dealt. I'll deal with them. I've survived the other ones. I'll survive this. And with a little bit of luck, I'll come out better and stronger, and have a story that, you know, hopefully at some point has some damn positive to it, because I'm sick of the negative, but I'm still battling along. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you really have gone through a lot. But as you mentioned, when you put into perspective some of the real difficult things that have happened to you, they were preceded by good stuff. I would say, you know, obviously how the Browns thing ended with the staph infection and then the legal stuff. And I know you can't speak to the legal because of confidentiality, but you had some great moments as a Cleveland Brown. Let's go back to that. I can recall when you were signing, how excited you were back in 06, almost 18 years ago, or just over 18 years ago, early March. And you became a Cleveland Brown, and you were very productive for the Browns for a few seasons there. What was that like, joining your hometown team, Joe, and playing in front of family and friends?
I think I can put it, I can start it with this. My top three memories of professional football was being drafted by the New York Football Giants in the second round, getting that phone call, right? You know, all the work that I put in from, you know, grade school, just being outside with friends and playing pickup, you know, football games, being at the play, being in the park, to Lake Catholic, to Penn State, and then getting that phone call. So my number one of my top three is actually, in this kind of in no particular order, but these are my three most vivid memories: being drafted by the New York Football Giants.
Gotcha.
Having a big part with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers organization and being able to win a childhood dream of Super Bowl 37. And then my third one isn't necessarily on the field. It was driving to the field when I drove by the Municipal Stadium parking lot for my first Browns game. And I saw people in the Muni parking lot wearing my jersey.
Whoa, dope.
I remember My wife can attest to this. I broke down because it was just a rush. Like I'd wanted to come home and put on the orange and play on the lakefront. And I remember seeing my jersey and people wearing my jersey. And I got emotional because it was just kind of like, listen, this is why I came home, not for the jersey there, but that was just kind of this thing that sticks with me. I could tell you probably exactly where I was on two there, right in front of the parking lot when I saw that those jerseys. So those are my three standout moments. And then obviously getting an opportunity being voted team captain and going on a 10-6 team. And ultimately I thought we should have been in the playoffs, but based on how things were and all that, but I came home to be able to catch, some touchdowns in front of the dog pound and just to be able to wear the helmet, to have my family see me play one last time before, I became old and decrepit. those are my memories.
Well, they were fun to watch, Joe, and it was great. It gives a local guy a lot of pride to see one of our own, get the same sense of pride seeing Kareem tote the pigskin for the Browns. Saw that with you, obviously, Bernie Kosar and the list goes on. So many guys grew up that way. And it was not to bring religion into it, but it was kind of a religious experience as a kid, wasn't it? Just being a Browns faithful patron, as it were.
Yeah, there's no question. Being able to watch the Cardiac Kids, which I think is kind of when you started to come into the fold in Cleveland, right?
Yeah, 1980 was my first year. Yeah. So
Cardiac Kids, and just to be able to, eventually meet Coach Ritigliano through Jason Garrett's foundation and, just striking up all the guys that I used to watch, the Doug Deacons of the world and just kind of Bernie Kosar's, obviously. So there's that element, right? There's that religion part of it. But I also remember, when we were consistently going into the playoffs and the AFC championship games, the buildup inside the city, right? What that felt like. I remember painting the oldest, ugliest white jeans that I had orange and being able to wear them. And I remember the tailgate partying in the garages of our house, of our friends. I remember going onto the roof of our house in Timberlake, Ohio, and my dad yelling through the basement block window, turn it a little bit to the north. And I'm like, which way's north? There's a blizzard out here. It's, I'm twisting an antenna to try to pick up a signal in a neighboring state or city. So those memories are vivid, and again, I wanted to go outside and play. And, there's still times that you can get kind of emotional. Like, two of my favorite sounds in the world, both involve gravel. One of them is hearing truck tires on a gravel road. I love it.
Yeah.
And one is hearing spikes on gravel. And it reminds me of when I was a kid and I would go watch the Cleveland Browns at Lakeland Community College.
Yeah.
Watching all the guys come out of the locker room and walk from the school building onto the practice field, and you would hear the crunch of gravel because of their spikes. And so my memories kind of, they're entrenched there. I could tell you a lot of things from eating dog biscuits and all the songs, big bad Cleveland Browns, baddest team, football team in town kind of thing. So I wanted to come home for a purpose and for that reason that I wanted to I figured I'll never go to the Hall of Fame, but not everybody gets that chance. So I just know that I had the opportunity to come home, win some games, play in front of, a city that is probably the most deserving of some good coming their way, because it was good, in the 80s and the 90s, and obviously the 2000s have been some positive, but, still all that negative. And, it's a passionate fan base, John, and I came home to be part of that. I'm glad I did. Just a hometown kid. But, it's funny, like my reason of moving out of Cleveland and doing all that is like, it's given me all. It's always going to be my home. But as I go through life, I have to see what's over the next set of hills or the next mountain range, because I figure life isn't a dress rehearsal, right? We get one shot at this thing, and
right.
For me, I want to make the most of it. So I'm I'm a hometown Cleveland kid. I've been there, you know, majority of my life. My wife and I lived there for 16, 17 years. She lived there longer in Cleveland than she's ever lived anywhere. And she's lived in Europe. She's lived in Los Angeles and New York. And she loves Cleveland. But it was time for me to go. I just needed some change. You know, some of those things we talked about with,
right,
the negativity and, it was time for me to go. So I'm out of here, and we're going to start making our venture west here in another year, Montana, Idaho. And hopefully by that time, my business is up and running and I'm getting mailbox money and I get to ranch or farm and fish and hunt.
Well, that's the perfect segue here, Joe, because if you're listening to the pod, you don't know, you might see a clip or two on my social medias of Joe with the great trophy game that's behind him. Joe, you love to hunt all different types, and you're out in Nebraska. And let's set our listeners up as to why Nebraska first and foremost. I mean, you had two daughters that are involved in the sport of volleyball, and Nebraska kind of, along with your friend with the ranch out there, that kind of was a match made in heaven in some ways.
Yeah, for the time being, my oldest daughter committed here when she was a junior, I guess, to the University of Nebraska. You know, in the whole college thing, I think we even touched about it at coffee the other day that, listen, it's not what I know it as, and I don't like it at all, but you have these kids committing at a young age. They think that this is where they want to go because they see all the fluff and duff. And Nebraska is a hotbed for women's volleyball. The state's crazy about it. But I'll also tell you, there's not a lot of things going on here in the state of Nebraska. So I'm going to the volleyball game, even if I don't like volleyball, because there's not a lot to do in Nebraska. but with that being said, Caroline committed here to the University of Nebraska and then redshirted last year. And through that time, just realized that maybe it wasn't the best spot for her. And there were two schools that I always thought were the best for her. One of them being Stanford, one of them being Penn State. And I didn't care which one. I just knew that as a dad, that these kind of fit who she is academically, where she wants to go, what she wants to do. And she transferred out of Nebraska, John, and decided to go to Penn State, which made me happy. Going back to the reason we moved to Nebraska, it wasn't for her. It was my youngest one was dealing with some stuff back home too, and some of it dealing with the robbery and having PTSD.
Yeah.
We just felt that it was time not only for me, but for her for some change. And we decided to be here. And coincidentally, the oldest one was here for the year, which was great. But my daughter fell into a really good position here with a good school, a great high school coach, great friends, a great club. And she's flourishing in her own way. And I thought it was important as we were kind of navigating being parents, that it's a good lesson for our kids. Like, sometimes you do have to pick up and move, and you're going to survive, you know. And what she did at 16 years old, 15 going on 16 at that point, or no, it was 16. That's not easy for a 16 year old to do, right? To pick up and move.
Sure. And
she did. And she's got her good group of friends still back in Cleveland. And she's got a great group of friends here in Nebraska. And I can tell you this, that when she graduates next year, if Thursday is graduation day, Friday's moving day.
Really?
No, I'm on here. Like, I love it. The people are unbelievable here, but I'm in Big Red country now, and I get to be a Nittany Lion, and we're going to see what happens with Ava here when her opportunity comes. But, it is really good here. You know, my college roommate from Penn State is here as head coach. I don't know if you knew that Matt Rule was one of my best friends at when I was at Penn State. Matt's doing a, you know, really good job here. Obviously, yeah. The volleyball program is, you know, the volleyball program. But again, change is inevitable for all of us. And you just kind of figure ways to reinvent yourself. And we thought it was a good opportunity. And Ava has reinvented herself. She's happy, flourishing. So we have one more year here. I am down to account. You know, I got it down to account, hour, minute, and seconds. And then, you know, we move on with our life again.
Wow. So before we move on with our lives, can we just go back to last summer when that exhibition took place at the football stadium, the Nebraska, 93,000, I think, was a figure of women. That had to be just absolutely mind-blowing, Joe, the explosion of women's college sports. But basketball is huge with Caitlin Clark, and then obviously Nebraska and those teams, that are the elite teams, being able to draw so many people to watch women's volleyball. Pretty cool.
I think it was special for women athletes. It was obviously special for the state of Nebraska to be able to do that, to fill up the stadium, and for the girls just to run out on the court, let alone be able to play, is something that, you know, it's I got to do that every weekend at Penn State with 110,000 people, or 106 or whatever it was, 96,000. I forgot. It's 110 now, my bad. But nonetheless, I got to do that every home game. Right. And now these girls who, you know, for people that don't follow the game of women's volleyball, there's an argument, you know, and I guess I am partial to it, that it's a really athletic, powerful, graceful sport. And when you're watching it at the top level of a Penn State and Nebraska, Stanford, Texas, we can go down a list. The girls are tall. They move. They hit. They're aggressive. Like, it's a crazy fun sport to watch. But to do it in front of 93,000 people, an outdoor game, under the lights, to have a flyover. You know, the flyover for me was no different than when I played. I cried. I've cried every flyover that we've ever had. I've got choked up because I have such strong emotion for our military, for all the branches. And I know we live in the greatest country in the world, but here's my daughter out on a field, outside on a football field at the University of Nebraska, 93,000 fans, unbelievable weather, flyovers, and something that was talked about by, you know, all different sports personalities, because that's how special it was. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. It just to see the pictures, the video, it was just amazing. And obviously knowing the history of the program there and just how big women's college sports is getting. I'm excited, you know, the women's Final Four coming to Cleveland, Joe, in a matter of weeks. That's going to be really exciting to see some of the greatest players in college basketball here on the floor at the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Going to be really, really cool. They're all going for that big trophy. You have big trophies on the wall behind you. What's your favorite or most difficult kind of game to go after, and where do you do most of it at?
So I had a farm. So if you guys remember Steve Hyden, long time for the Cleveland Browns. Steve's one of my good buddies, and
knew him well. Good dude, good man.
Yeah, he's coaching in Detroit with Dan Campbell. He's a tight end coach in Detroit right now with Dan. But I was invited out to his farm in Iowa after our season, and I guess it would have been 06. And I fell in love with the place, and I bought a farm about 5 miles down the road as a crow flies kind of thing. And I got into farming. So I've hunted white-tailed deer there on the farm. I've out here in Nebraska. I've been to Africa. Here in Nebraska, mule deer, white-tailed turkeys. I love trapping. I just like being outside, but I've been to South Africa, the Eastern Cape, hunting plains game, and taking that whole thing in terms of just the history and just how special of a place Africa is. But my hardest, moose, elk, you name it, but brown bear hunting, I went 4 times. And finally, on my 4th time, you're talking about 4 times, each of them about 2 weeks in total. Seeing bears, not being able to get anywhere near them because they were coming out of hibernation and looking for mates. You know, there's a whole conservation thing. And if you need to know anything about me, like, I love my conservation. Like, it's huge. Teddy Roosevelt, I have a painting of Teddy over here over my right shoulder. And he's my, you know, some people have Michael Jordan or Larry Bird as a hero. I got Teddy Roosevelt because I love living in the United States where we get to have a national park. But I would say bear hunting, because it was finally the 4th time after living in tents, float plane rides, that you had to grease my hips because the planes were so small to squeeze me in there. I've been on horseback hunting them for 13, 14, up to 20 miles in one day on a horseback looking for bears. So Jeremiah Johnson is probably my, maybe another type of hero, but I love being outside and I like elements. I don't like, you know, Africa was unbelievable, but it was it's a little too fluffy for me. You know,
it was all set up. You mean everything was set up for you?
Just being the places that you stay. It's almost like, the hunting is the hunting. Hunting's hard. Hunting's really hard, but I do it. There's places that I've been in Pink Mountain, British Columbia, and I've been to Alaska 5 times. I've been to Newfoundland. I can sit on the side of a mountain, John, and it's as close as I think that I could possibly get to heaven before hopefully one day I get there. But I see stuff that normal people don't, that the everyday person doesn't get to see, because I have to go into spots that you don't get to see, right? You only get to see them maybe if somebody takes a picture of it. But to go back on horseback into British Columbia, into Pink Mountain, British Columbia, and look for grizzlies and hear wolves howling, to see moose, it's what ultimately makes me happy. And I've got 2 daughters and a wife. So when I get my opportunity to be free, I need to fish, I need to hunt, I need to do manly guy things. And that's what I love to do.
And it sounds, just playing amateur psychologist for you, Joe, it's, as you mentioned, closest to heaven per se, but it seems to me to be also the furthest away from some of the crap that you've had to deal with in your life.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, over a cup of coffee this morning, my wife could tell I was a little bit agitated, and not at her. It was just I'm still dealing with the aftermath of the fire, and we're going to be dealing with it in a while here until we get into a new place and new machines are in, and so there's so many things. But I just had my buddy John, the one that owns the ranch here in Nebraska, just came back with his 2 sons Cape Buffalo hunting. He literally just got back on Sunday and sent me some pictures this morning. And I need to get out there and do what I love to do to make me happy. But obviously this is what I got to deal with is going to be the most important thing. But playing mini psychologists, like you said, yeah, it's ultimately where I get my peace and quiet. And some people laugh, like, how can you go into Africa and live in Alaska for 2 weeks and just sleep in a tent on the ground in bear country, and it's cold and it's raining, and some days you just got to stay in the tent because you're stopped in there. It's too cloudy to see anything. It's too wet and too windy to get out there. Everything's bedded down, and it becomes a mental challenge. And again, the money that I've spent to be able to travel, plane flights, and it's ultimately what puts a big smile on my face, other than my family.
Well, you're also talking about things that are extremely difficult to do, and you prefer that. And I think a lot of that goes back to great motivation. Where did the motivation just to be the best at something come from, Joe? And could it have preceded you as a kid at Justin Martyr? Could it have preceded you as a kid at Lake Catholic? Or is it something that life's kind of taught you as you've gone along?
A little bit about my family story, because we kind of have I've had to work my whole life. We have a mutual friend. One's your brother-in-law, who's one of my Uncle Joe's best friends. And, you know, Greg was the guy that would help me with my math. I've always had to work at things. All these years later, it would have been easier to know that ADHD was probably going on when I was a kid. No, it's funny, but we didn't talk about that stuff back then. But I would say that because I was the oldest of the grandkids in my family, that I got to know my grandparents. They immigrated. You know, my dad was born on May 7th, 1945, which was the day that the Second World War was officially ended. He was born in a German displaced persons camp out of Germany, in Germany, when they had to escape Lithuania because the Russians, the communists were coming in. So there's all these stories, and I got to see and understand and learn the trials and tribulations of what the family had to go to. So hard work was never anything that was new to me. I saw it. I had a grandpa, my grandfather, would work 35 days in a row. Never missed a day of work in 35 years. I'm sorry. Never missed a day of work. And that stuff kind of always sat with me. So, you know, I have some people that say, you know, why do you work? Do you don't have to work? Maybe I do, maybe I don't. But, you know, I think it's more of a, you know, my grandpa on the making drill bits, my other grandpa on the working in the coal car of the trains, my grandmother working at Perkins in Euclid. My dad being a union member, and my mom getting my ass to practice, to school, making sure there was dinner on the table when my dad would come home ornery. You know, there's so many things. So the work ethic for me, I never wanted to disappoint my family. I never did. And I think all the years later, there were times, John, even playing pro football, when my body was pretty broke up. You know, I have arms that don't straighten out. I got fingers that I've got screws in my wrist, back surgeries, the concussions, my knee, obviously. But I never wanted to fail. And it was, I would tell myself, I was going to retire every single year. Like, that's how bad my body was hurting. And, you know, trying to drink a vodka and swallow a pain pill just to get through practice probably wasn't the smartest thing to do, but you know, you did what you had to do. I just didn't want to fail. And it was hard for me. It was hard for me to grind through, and I never liked disappointing. So, it's probably why I'm probably better served today with all the stuff that's happened to me in my life. And most recently with that building, that I'm going to get my ass up because I have no choice. You know, there's a saying that says you can rest when you're dead. And that's kind of how I feel. So I never like to disappoint people. I always like being there for my teammates. I know when Michael was sick, my son was sick, and I made a decision at the last second to fly to Philadelphia for the NFC Championship game. You know, my wife and my mother-in-law pushed me out of the house. They said, you need to go be with them. You need to be. We got Michael. They were in the hospital with them. And just to be able to go there in what was the roughest time of my life, period, to be able to help the Buccaneers out and win the NFC Championship game to go to Super Bowl 37. So I kind of thrive on trying to help people and not disappoint them. And I think that that's something that I learned a long time ago, that it was never easy. It's not like my grandparents, my family, I would say they would come from it's East Cleveland, considered the inner city. They grew up broke, and they had different things that I'd never have to experience. And I'm fortunate about that. But through that, it taught me a valuable lesson on just get your ass up and smile. So on days like today where I didn't want to smile when I got up and I've been a little bit grumpy, talking to you actually makes me feel good. Kind of like I get to vent, but I learned it at a young age, man. They never had a lot of money, but they had their beer and we were listening to polka music. They sure as hell smiled.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what took them to their little part of heaven, if you will, to combat some of the difficult things that they went through. And you speak of the same way. You know, the fear of failure, the fear of disappointing others kept you on the path that it's kept you on for all these years. And there's a lot to live for. And just to hear you talk about like hunting, and if you don't mind, I'd like to even dig a little bit more into that. Just the physical difficulty of being out there by yourself, or maybe with one other person, or whatever the case may be. Does that serve you well? Like your heart, does it make you feel full when you're out there doing something that's as difficult as trying to hunt down prey and doing it the right way?
Yeah, because I think there's so many stories that come out of it. There's so many things that I every animal that I have, right? I've butchered it myself. I've eaten it. I've skinned it out. I've got it to the taxidermist. I don't know if you can see this right now, but like, this is my hobby right now. I like to make, I love woodworking. So when I have weekends off, that's a turkey call that I'm working on right now that I'm making. I taught myself woodworking. Mm-hmm. And So there's so many gratifying things that come out from it, the spirituality of the thing, the memory of it, being up on top of a mountain hunting mountain goat, looking down and seeing glacier water in the middle of a, you know, the bowl basically between the ranges, and it's aqua blue from all the minerals and content in there. So it's spiritual. There's also some funny things that happen. You know, one of them is just as simple as the last time I was bear hunting a couple years ago in the Alaskan Peninsula in Cold Bay, Alaska, my cot, I'm about 25 pounds heavier, 30 pounds heavier than when I played, but I'm in better shape because I work out all the time. I have more muscle. And back then I used to eat like a bird so I could stay 230
at the
pounds.
Weight. Gotcha.
Right?
Yep.
Now I get to eat healthy and I just have more muscle on me than I had when I was playing receiver. But where I wanted to go with this is, John, a couple years ago, I'm in Cold Bay hunting bear and I'm on my cot and my big ass is kind of now touching the ground. Well, we had a huge storm that rolled in there. And, you know, you're in grizzly country, you're in brown bear country, not grizzly country, you're in brown bear country. I'm on a tent. There's a trail, a bear trail that's literally rolls right between my tent and the guide that I'm with. He's in his own tent. So you've got all these things running through your mind about, you know, like you're sleeping with your gun next to you. It's of course loaded, but the safety's on, but you know, the what ifs, you know, that's how you try to put yourself to sleep. Well, I'm on my cot. It's raining. The tent's flapping. It's just miserable. It's cold. I'm in my sleeping bag and my back and rear end are kind of resting on the ground because the cot's sunk. And I almost get this massage. Like I feel something run underneath me and it was field mice that were out there. And I jumped out of bed, grabbed my gun. And I'm like, here I am. I could get hit by Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu, you know, play against some of the game's greatest. And take a hit and get up, but a field mouse made me jump out of my tent. So that kind of stuff that I'm by myself and you have to laugh at yourself. And that's what, to me, the outdoors rewards me with. Memories, both good and bad. I've left hunting and not shot anything. And people would say, how are you so happy? It's because, you know, where else can you sit in a tree stand and have a cardinal land on your boot and then just stare at you for a minute? You know, that stuff doesn't typically happen, but I was out there, I was camoed up and I've had a red cardinal land on my foot for a minute when I was on my farm in Iowa. So I've had gray whales come in and hunt herring in Alaska while I was drinking a cup of coffee on a rock and I heard them blow. I've heard in look, pick my head up and I see this spray and the gray whales coming in to eat herring at the start of the herring season in Alaska and Kodiak. I started, you know, from a guy that guided me, his name's Buck Bowden. He's kind of a legend in the state of Alaska. He's a master guide and pilot. And he's kind of just left the real world, took a string of 30 horses, made his way back into the Alaska range and started his own life out there. Guiding, trapping. And then through him, I saw him making bowls once, turning bowls from wood burls. And I got into woodworking because I just watched him and I thought, hell, that would be cool. So I think one thing that it does too is like, you know, of course the sports element is so important for me because it helped give me the opportunity that I have in life, John.
Yeah.
But I would say that as I get older, as I start to kind of navigate post-athletics, I didn't want to be one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be a guy that was going to sit around town and talk about what I used to do. Like, you know, the glory days guy.
Yeah.
Like what I used to do is being done by unbelievable athletes every day, both men and women. You know, that's so... that was my time 100 years ago. And now it's just like, man, I learned farming on my own. You know, I had a tractor. I had two tractors on my farm in Iowa. And the guy dropped it off and he said, you're going to take it up to the barn. I had him meet me out at the road, which, you know, was about 400 or 500 yards from my little cabin. And I said, I got some work to do down here. I'll get it a little bit later. Well, the reason I didn't do it when he was there is because I didn't know how to drive a tractor. Big old John Deere. So then I figured out how to do it, and that's how I learned. And everything that I try to do is self-taught. but it keeps me going. So, you know, when I make a turkey call out of a piece of wood that I took from my family's house in Chardon, and then I kill a turkey here in Nebraska with it, like, it's pretty special to me.
Yeah, that sounds cool that you're really making your experiences, and a lot of them are out in the, you know, the wild beyond, if you will. And that's really cool. I've always wanted to get like in the heads of folks that really enjoy hunting, and from podcasts I've listened to, you know, to you're all rifle, right? Do you do bow, Joe, or mostly rifle?
No, I've got my bows. I go to I belong to a bow club out here. And in the summer after I work out, when the weather breaks again, I'll work out here, you know, 5:30 in the warehouse. And then I travel about 15 minutes down the road and I shoot about 20 arrows up to 100 yards, just for the therapy of it. I make my own arrows. I do, you know, I enjoy it all. And probably the thing that stands out, like, I've learned so much about conservation. You know, there's groups out there that obviously don't like hunting, but the number of times I've come home empty handed, and the number of times that even to this day that I put something back out there in the form of food or habitat. I was just in South Dakota about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, for the Pheasants Forever event that I belong to, the Pheasants Forever. And I spent about 2 hours at a booth learning about runoff and different soil compacts and how it affects birds and nesting. So, you know, I maybe wasn't the best. I had to work in school. I was, you know, I'm not a dumbass, but I'm interested in what I like, you know. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't interested in multiplication because, you know, your brother-in-law can attest that I had to work at math. But, you know, I probably don't sell myself. I don't give myself enough credit. Like, I understand math. I have to be good at it because I'm in a business. But the things that really make me happier, I love learning about anything outside, conservation, trees, you know, you name it. Those are the things that get me up and going. And it's probably the number one reason that I don't watch a lot of football as I get older. I'll follow scores. I might watch a quarter here and there. But if you're going to say it's an unbelievable October day or November day,
get out.
I'm outside, you know, the discipline, you know, just kind of the things that I know you do. We talked about ice baths. I mean, every morning I try to get, you know, it's a cold shower, it's my ice bath, it's working out. But I try to do all those little things so that I can go do the things that I really want to do, which is be outside.
That's cool. Well, it sounds like you're on a fantastic path for that. Good luck to your youngest gal as she navigates her way through the high school volleyball scene. Good luck to your bride, Megan. It's Megan, right?
Megan,
good luck to her, to your eldest daughter over there. It'll be kind of fun for you to go to state college on occasion, maybe to see her play some volleyball. First and foremost, good luck coming out of the whole situation that you have with the, will it be a new building? Will you have to relocate in another physical plant? How will that work, Joe?
I started looking at buildings. I put a couple offers out there for buildings. We'd have to rebuild the location that we were at off of 55th. And that's going to be well over a year.
Sure.
Listen, you know, I have so many mentors. You know, Bob Schwartz, the guy I mentioned earlier that taught me about the laundromat business, and I've hired business coaches. I got a guy named Ken Frischella back home in Cleveland that has helped me and helps us with our books and understanding numbers. He's works as a CFO. I've always tried to surround myself with people that I can learn from, because I know my limitations. You know, work isn't a limitation for me, but you know, I've just around X's and O's my whole life.
Yeah.
So I could talk about that all day long. The challenge for me has just been trying to learn as much in business. And because I've surrounded myself with such a good group of guys, I think something positive will come out of this. But, you know, no pun intended, but, you know, once the smoke clears kind of thing, and I get to take a step back and calm down, I maybe we do come out of this. I think people are going to appreciate how we've been able to keep our business and keep our customers. And we're going to come out of this thing stronger. Although the majority of the days over the past week, week and a half, whatever it's been since the, you know, the building went up, there's just a lot of suck. And I just have to embrace the suck.
Yeah, look beyond the suck, but you still have to get through the suck. Yeah, and I guess that kind of sums up life sometimes in many ways, shapes, and forms. But again, you have always embraced tough things. And, you know, playing amateur psychologist on myself as well, doing, you know, things like ice baths or obviously go out and running 100 miles, those are not easy things to do. But I think through doing the difficult and the real arduous things, I think we grow as a person or people, and we maximize more of what we're about. Some of those tough things that came upon you weren't things you chose to have, but they happened, and yeah. you've gone through them, Joe.
Yeah, John, you know, my buddy John, his daughter, the one here in Nebraska, his daughter plays for Racing Louisville. She was number 2 pick in the women's Major League Soccer draft in the in the NWSL. And anyway, she's a number 2 pick. She was a 2-time player of the year at Florida State. And she's just such a good person. And he sent me a video this morning to say it ain't all that bad, because Jalen does a lot of work with kids that are handicapped. Down syndrome kids is kind of where she spent so much of her time trying to make them smile. And he sent me a video of a girl that Jalen has touched her life. And that girl came out, saw Jalen, and freaked out and just jumped on Jalen. And, you know, I know there's other people, as we talked about, that have it worse. You know, it's, there's little things that kind of that keep you going. So getting those kind of things and seeing, like, man, just putting a smile, I'm going to put a smile on somebody's face like Jalen was able to. One of my workers is going to be better served. We're going to get them, you know, better pay. We're going to do all kinds of things. So I'm going to come out. I'm going to continue to fight. I'm going to take the lessons that life's taught me, even the ones that I wanted nothing to do with, and utilize those memories and how I've survived those. You know, this is different in the sense that, you know, the building's down, but I guess that's why we have insurance. But it still would have been a hell of a lot easier just to continue to run the operation as it was versus what we're doing now.
Perfect. Well said. All the best to you, Joe. Thanks for hopping on the pod with me. And I look forward to other conversations down the road. All the best to you, my friend.
You got it, brother. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks so much to Joe for sitting down and chatting, and all the best as he and his family and that business as they move forward. And thank you for listening. As always, you can help us out by rating, reviewing, hitting that follow button, helping to grow the podcast. We're going to continue to do these kinds of conversations, and I hope you continue to follow along as we move here on the podcast. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week for another edition of Talage Talks. We'll see you then.